with Aubrey Masango
on 702. The Talk, the Talk.
It is 15 minutes to 10 o'clock and I'm joined on the line by Aliyah Vyas. She's an international relations analyst and joining us to discuss the attacks that happened last night on Israel and what the implications are, what the allies are on both sides are saying, and the implications for world economies and world peace. Yeah. Aliyah, good evening to you. Thank you so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate your time. Escalating tensions in the Middle East, and we hear of drones and missiles coming from Iran. Give us the background. What's going on? Why? What's happening?
Great. Thank you so much for having me on the show. So I'll start with a little bit of historical context, just to start us off on the right note, is that, historically, Israel and Iran have not had good geopolitical relations by any means. For one, Israel has attacked various Iranian bases across the Middle East over 100 times in the last year, bar what happened, over the past 72 hours. So by no means is this, a surprise or relations turned sour. So what we saw is that on April 1st, Israel had struck a Iranian consulate in the Syrian capital of Damascus. And, on the 13th of April, Iran decidedly retaliated according to its, quote unquote, its right to self-defense, because naturally it considers its consulate, an attack on its sovereignty, because the consulates are largely considered by international law the property or the no matter which country it is, it's the property or the land belonging to the country of which it is a consulate. So as you mentioned, it was about 300, a mixture of 300 drones and missiles that were launched from Iran or Iranian land to Israel with the objective of attacking a strategic military target in Israel from which the missile came, which struck its consulate in Damascus. A little bit of background surrounding neighbors, for example, Jordan had closed its airspace, to allow for those drones to come through in somewhat, we can very broadly assume that it is in somewhat supported Iran. However, naturally, these drones were intercepted by not only Israel's incredibly powerful defense system defense system, but also by its allies, namely the UK, the US, and France, all of which have a powerful military presence in the Middle East at present. And I think that brings us to today. Naturally, the Israeli war cabinet of three, including Benjamin Netanyahu, have, announced that they want to retaliate. They believe that it is within their right to retaliate as Iran has attacked their borders, their sovereignty, threatened its national security, and Iran has responded by saying, well, if you retaliate, we will have the right to come back with an even stronger kind of force, even stronger show of military power. More broadly, the international community has very much strongly encouraged Israel not to retaliate by any means, simply for the fact of regional stability and security. So we've had messages from the White House, from the U.S. President Joe Biden to Benjamin Netanyahu saying, please do not escalate the situation. Please do not retaliate in any means that may spark a fully fledged regional war. We've had members of the international community, including the United Nations Security Council and United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who has, again, urged de-escalation for fear of what might come to the Middle Eastern region. That's a thorough roundup for you.
Take me back to the attack on the Iran consulate in Damascus. What were the casualties there? And what was the reasoning behind that attack?
First and foremost, the entire consulate was blown to bits, and there were reported deaths of at least 8 Iranian foreign service officials, which again, is exceptionally high profile, given that if this had to happen to any other country, it is against international law. It is a full frontal attack on a country. It is for many a declaration of war. Naturally, as I mentioned, Israel continues to attack Iranian military bases and checkpoints, etc., across the Middle East. But I think, you know, it's largely speculated, and I believe Israel very strategically attacked this consulate in order to deter the public's attention, not only the general public but the global community, political community's attention from its genocide in Gaza at present, and you know, the ongoing political instability that the country is facing, the public unrest, as well as, you know, ongoing settler violence across the West Bank. I think Israel chose a very crucial moment by which, you know, the global public opinion really was not in Israel's favor regarding its actions on the Gaza Strip. So it was by any means weak, you know, even regarding its most powerful partner, the U.S. It was, while the U.S. was constantly defending Israel's right to self-defense and, you know, by extension, its actions in the Gaza Strip, it was in turn facing a lot of domestic pressure regarding its support of Israel. So I think there is no one political, you know, catalyst that sparked Israel's actions towards the Iranian consulate in Damascus. However, I think it chose its moment quite strategically.
The cabinet, what do you call the cabinet that decides on whether or not
the war cabinet
in Israel has come out to say that they are going to retaliate even against the admonitions of their own allies, and I'm speaking here of America. Who are the allies of Iran besides Jordan and perhaps even Damascus on an international sort of level? That would sort of balance out things in the same way that we see a country such as, let's say, the West. Who else is on Iran's side in all of this? I've seen suggestions that Turkey might be on the side of Iran and so forth. But who are on the side of Iran in this particular case?
I think politically, I think you're correct. I think, you know, I think there are two levels to answer this question. First, in terms of history and, you know, political alignment, I think you do have countries like, Turkey, like Lebanon, as you mentioned, Jordan, who have, you know, strongly aligned with Iran in the past on political and diplomatic levels. I think more broadly, as you mentioned, on the international scale, I think this can be thought of as, you know, it could very easily be reduced to think of, well, Iran represents anti-Western sentiment, because what Israel represents is by extension, the U.S. So I think in that spirit, we can look at, the Chinese, the Russians, who have not, partially, in very kind of vague, not strong at all terms, condemned what Iran did over, you know, in the past 72 hours, but not in so much as you would categorize it as against Iran or not at all politically aligned with Iran. So I think when you consider what Iran and its actions represent in terms of the right to self-defense, the standing up against Israel for conducting itself in a manner that is wholly, you know, counter to the principles of international law and respect for another nation's sovereignty, I think a lot of the world would, you know, in principle side with Iran in that respect.
What has the damage been to Israel after the drone attack from Iran?
I think largely, I mean, remember, around 300 drones and a mixture of missiles were launched, and the vast majority of them were intercepted by existing forces, you know, by especially the U.S. However, so there wasn't any, you know, wide-scale damage. So, for example, nobody died. There were no casualties. Which I think, you know, in and of itself is a feat achieved by Iran. But I think the defense mechanisms that were deployed that evening in order to intercept those drones cost the Israeli economy millions of dollars. And I think that is not gone unnoticed by the current Israeli cabinet and broad scale government, as well as the Israeli public. We've got a lot of political instability in that country and public unrest. People who have been calling for a general election, who have been calling for Netanyahu to be ousted from government, you know, not only now, but generally, given the actions of the Israeli Defense Forces across Palestinian occupied territories.
Then there's, of course, the issue of Rafah that was expecting an imminent attack from Israeli ground forces. To what extent has that dimension, that issue, been a player in what has happened over the last 72 hours?
I think, again, we go back to the fact that Israel's actions against Iran were exceptionally strategic. The imminent ground invasion, as has been quoted by the Israeli administration and Western media, was on the top of the globe's political agenda. Everybody was waiting for this penny to drop for, you know, how, to what extent can this genocide get worse? And, you know, human rights organizations, the UN, you know, every possible political actor that stood for international law and human rights was ready, at the ready to continue criticizing Israel. And now what we see is, you know, the past 72 hours, Gaza and what's happening across Palestinian occupied territories, as well as at the Rafah border, has largely dropped a little bit lower from, the media and the global political agenda, which I think is very much what Israel wanted in its actions towards Iran. But, you know, not expecting Iran to retaliate in the way that it did, but it definitely can be considered a success for Israel that people are not primarily focusing on Gaza, are not primarily criticizing Israel, and its actions across, Palestinian territories. I think, historically Israel has paid much attention to how it is portrayed on the world stage. And I think, you know, the way that global public opinion has shifted in its disfavor has definitely ruffled feathers in the present, Israeli government.
Some of us on the African continent are perhaps asking questions like, how come we haven't seen the defense of the people of Gaza directly from countries such as Iran, Jordan, Turkey? Yes, there has been some sort of rhetoric, but we haven't seen any real, defense of the people of Gaza against Israel. What would you say the reason for that is?
I think, you know, to sum it up, we have to look at strategic interests. Countries act within their own strategic interests. Those interests can be broken up into domestic level interests, so what, you know, their public want, and international interests in terms of their relations with other countries and how they are portrayed, you know, in global fora such as the United Nations. I think when you look at the reasons why countries, for example, like Jordan, who already face security threats, like Egypt, who already face security threats as well as domestic political threats, why would they, what do they have to gain by kind of intervening in this very, very tense situation in Palestine, or specifically in the Gaza Strip? And the answer really is not much, unfortunately, because neighboring countries are not rich countries by any means. They do not have, you know, military fleets at the ready, or prepared even, big enough to take on one of the world's strongest military powers, which is Israel, backed by the world's strongest military power, which is the US. So I think, broader, if a country like Jordan or Egypt were to intervene, you know, by any military means, in a place like the Gaza Strip, I think, you know, thinking about the consequences. So, for example, economic sanctions by the U.S. could cripple a country like Jordan, like Egypt, like Lebanon, like Syria. And I think countries like that simply have too much to lose. And in actual fact, I think a fair amount of countries are waiting themselves to see what happens, because this war, this genocide between Israel and the Palestinians has been coming to a head for over, you know, 70 years. This is, you know, many believe that this is the time, if not now, when. Occupation cannot continue like this.
This is the time for what?
So I think this is the time for, you know, whatever needs, however this genocide is going to end, you know, whether it begins, or kind of ends with an Israel, with Israel being reckoned on the international stage, or whether it is, you know, Palestine and Israel being pushed toward the two-state solution, the finality of this conflict must come at some point, because it is largely caused for much regional instability. And I think, again, you know, even at the domestic level, many people have asked, well, why doesn't Egypt just open the Rafah border and allow Palestinians in and allow, you know, the thousands of Palestinians who are starving and facing dire humanitarian conditions in? Is because, number one, you know, Egypt or any surrounding country cannot take on that domestic burden. It is impossible. It is absorbing a nation of people, which you can't, any country in the world cannot be expected to do that. And secondly, when you see the interviews of Palestinian people, going anywhere else is not in their interest. It's not their land. It's not their people. It's not their their identity.
So as I close, Alia, so this whole thing with Iran doesn't really have much to do with the assistance of the people of Gaza.
No, not at all. I think you're exceptionally right, Aubrey. I think it works in disfavor of the people of Gaza because it detracts, as Israel wants, it detracts attention completely from, you know, the various atrocities in Gaza, from the continued bombardment to the ongoing humanitarian crises.
Alia Vaez, thank you so much for the insights and really appreciate you agreeing to talk to us. Alia Vaez is an international relations analyst and joining us to talk about what happened over the last 72 hours in the Middle East. Thank you so much once again, Alia. Much appreciated.